this is your host, Debbie. Welcome to Gap Year for Grownups, a podcast for grownups who think that gap years should be a thing at any age. Welcome to episode 2. In this episode, I interview my husband, Sam Harrington. He's going to be a recurring guest on this podcast because he's my co-conspirator on the gap year that we took together. We lived in Washington, D.C. for 3 decades. Sam had a private medical practice as a gastroenterologist, stomach doctor, and I had a career that took a few more twists and turns, first as a journalist, then as the author of one of the first books about business blogging, and then as a corporate social media consultant. After our children were grown, and after much discussion, we left D.C. for a year of adventure and exploration, and we call that year a gap year after 60. We downsized, sold our house, and moved to a tiny community on the coast of Maine, and we started writing a blog together. Since the conclusion of our official gap year, Sam has written and published a book about death and dying, and among other things, I've become a producer and director of a popular storytelling event for women. In this interview, we talk about our decision to take a gap year and how Sam thought about it in the context of his private medical practice. I think you'll find that his decision-making reflects how anyone might go about trading an established identity for a new one that you create by taking a gap year. And even though he's my husband, it was a lot of fun to interview Sam. I heard a side of things I really hadn't heard before. Hi, Sam.
Hello, Debbie.
So, thank you so much for joining me on our new podcast, Gap Year for Grownups. There's so many questions I want to ask you, but first, I noticed that our wedding anniversary is coming up, and I looked at the numbers, and did all the subtraction, and we've been married for 46 years. What's your response to that?
How did you make that calculation? How many columns of numbers were involved?
Well, you
and
know.
I want to say that I consider this your podcast.
Oh, okay. Well, it probably is. But you can be an occasional guest. That would be really nice.
I want to be a guest. I want to be more than occasional, but I want you to feel comfortable that it's your podcast, and I'll only have some editorial comments. And with respect to the question about 46 years of marriage, my response to that is that we were very lucky. I think that broken marriages lead to lots of problems, and ours has been unbroken and a lot better than most. So I feel very fortunate.
Well, I will take that as a high compliment on our marriage because...
That would be a typical half-glass full compliment.
No, glass half-empty.
Half empty is the pessimist perspective. Half full is the optimist's perspective.
Oh, that's right. But aren't you usually a glass half empty type person?
Depends on whether I'm optimistic or pessimistic.
Okay, well,
the good news is it's never full or empty.
All right, well, let's dive right in here. Let's fill our listeners in on what this gap year thing is all about. And I know that there's so many different ways we could start, but tell me, what's your definition of a gap year for grownups?
Well, a gap year for grownups is mental acrobatics to justify early retirement without calling it retirement and without calling it a sabbatical. I would draw the distinction between sabbatical, which is to go off and refresh oneself, to come back and do essentially what they were doing, and retirement, which is to declare victory and certainly think of other things to do, but basically stop working. And a gap year is for take some time off to rediscover oneself with the intention of coming back and doing something different. So gap year, in our own case, involves looking at our lives, trying to decide what or a gap year for grown-ups, I should say, it involves some retrospective analysis of what one might have wanted to do more of or better than during their career, and then go out and challenge themselves to do it. Also with the intention of coming back and doing something different.
You know, it's interesting that you automatically talk about it in terms of happening in a stage that is nearing retirement. And that certainly was true for us. In fact, we call it or called it a gap year after 60, which is the name of our blog. But in talking to a lot of other people about the concept of a gap year or a time out, I've discovered that grown-ups of adults of many different ages are interested in taking a time out to reinvent themselves. So what you and I did it at age 61, 62, but it turns out there are many others who are interested, maybe even in their 30s, 40s, or 50s, of switching, pivoting, taking time out to look for a new purpose or whatever. And after much thought, I decided to make the podcast broad enough that I can talk to some of those other people too. But you and I had very much an experience of planning this at an interesting time of life when you're still young enough to work, but you're thinking about what comes next in this phase of, we'll call it young, old, you know, between 60 and 75 or something. Now, in your case, here you had this very successful medical practice in Washington, D.C., where we lived for 3 decades. And you were on the young side of a doctor to say, you know what, I'm just going to close up shop and move on and do something else. Can you tell us really what motivated you to do that, to make this change?
Well, I wasn't so motivated as to, I felt boxed in. I rather enjoyed my practice, but external forces influenced me to look for other options, because to continue my practice would have been quite required me to make multiple investments in time and technology that would have committed me to practicing for 15 plus years in terms of getting that investment back. And therefore, I wasn't enjoying it enough to want to commit to that kind of circumstance and to work for that length of time. So I'll just rattle off some of the external factors that were influencing me. I would have to buy a new set of computers for the office. I would have to buy a new electronic medical record for the office. I would have to obtain a new office lease. I would have to learn another new electronic medical record at my hospital, and I would likely have to hire a young associate. All of those would be financial commitments, some of them time commitments, and I did not see any way that I would get that investment back because of decreasing reimbursements in the sphere of medical practice, because private practices that I of the type I started with 30 plus years before have fallen into insignificance, and they essentially have no value unless they are linked with some kind of operating room structure or endoscopy suite structure. Having a list of patients in this day and age is not something one can sell and profit by. Having a list of patients is something that now one gives away to a younger physician, hoping that they will treat them in the way you wanted your patients to be treated.
That's a very logical sort of calculation that you were making, but still maybe not enough to close your practice and leave your patients, your beloved patients of 30 years. Do you think when push came to shove, there was a more emotional reason or a deeper reason that wasn't just practical? And you've outlined very clearly what the practical reasons were.
Well, definitely there was an emotional component. I was tiring of the way medicine was going. I was tiring of the fact that the best practices, or the standard of care, I should say, tended to be the care and treatment that made the practitioners, providers, healthcare systems the most amount of money. And I had tried to resist that in most ways, and I got tired of resisting it, and I, rather than continue to resist it or participate in it, I decided, I felt that with the other practical aspects, this was a good time to leave my practice. I left it in very good hands, and I left it with a practitioner who I deeply admired and who practiced in much the same way that I did. But let me, for the careful listener who knows the way I practice, I did charge more money for my services than the average physician. I did not charge a concierge fee because I thought that was one step beyond my comfort zone, but I did charge more for my services so that I did not have to invest in a variety of businesses to support my practice. And although I began that, I started that perspective on principle in, let's say, 1990, by the time I left, it had turned out to be to my detriment not to have other investments related to my business, but to my medical practice. But I struggled with mixing business and medicine throughout my career. Mm-hmm. And decided that I wanted to stop that. So to go back to my point, for patients who saw me, I made my money by charging more than the market, but I did not invest in business plans that prompted me to do unnecessary services or excessive services. By charging more for my services, I could justify doing fewer, in fact.
Yeah, but I'm breaking in here. Let's talk about money then, because you still actually didn't answer my question. Well, no, I asked, was there an emotional reason beyond the business and the practice?
The emotional reason was that I was tired of this struggle of trying to maintain my practice as a practice designed, focused on patient care rather than financial income.
Right. Okay. Well, hold on a minute. Because what I'm trying to get at is, it's so interesting to hear you talk about our decision and this move, this change we made entirely in terms of your profession, the business of it and so forth. It's interesting. But when I say emotional, I'm meaning, you know, what were the other things you'd always wanted to do if you had more time? Write a book? I don't know. Chop more wood? Were there things like that that you thought, if I only had more time or if I had a timeout, I would try some new things?
Well, I'm embarrassed to say that there wasn't. I had absolutely nothing that I would rather do than practice medicine in the way that I had wanted to practice it. But if I had continued that, I would not have been able to support myself. So I chose to leave my practice. With your encouragement and with our, as I say, mental acrobatics to justify it, and when I chose to leave my practice, then I decided to explore other things. And the gap year concept is one of exploration. Exploration that leads to change, as opposed to exploration as a sabbatical that leads to refreshment or reinvigoration, and or exploration as a retirement that leads to less work but more hobbies, that sort of thing. So I chose to look for other avenues to entertain myself, to do good in the sense of medical practice does good, to challenge myself in the things that I hadn't been able to bring myself to do when I was practicing. I did, in fact, I didn't think I wanted to write a book when I was in my medical practice. I knew I didn't have the bandwidth to do that, so that really didn't come up on my radar screen. But I wanted to speak out on a variety of subjects and didn't have the audience or the comfort zone to do it. Although I've gained a small audience and have modified my comfort zone, that still remains a challenge. But I wanted to speak out, and with the book I have.
Well, I wanted to ask you about money and how that weighed into your decision. And by the way, as I'm speaking here, people listening are probably thinking, wait a minute, this is all about Sam. He's talking about, you know, how he made the decision to leave his practice. But the fact is that we were, as a couple, as a family, completely tied to Washington, D.C. for decades, because that's where you practice medicine. So unless we made a dramatic change, we were not going to be able to do something different, really, as a couple. So that's why your work and stopping your work drove our decision to take the gap year and to leave Washington, D.C. But one of the things I remember in the many, many conversations we had leading up to our final decision, which occurred over a period of years, was the topic of money. And I know you started off by saying, well, what, how could we do this? You know, if you, Sam, gave up your income, how could we do this? And we talked about that, well, basically endlessly. But I remember at one point saying to you, Sam, I don't think this is ultimately a decision about money. It's about something else. It's about, you know, giving up your identity, your professional identity, which you inhabited so completely. And, you know, can you do that? And interestingly, it seems you could. But that's a question, I think, for anybody listening at whatever age. You know, is that something you're willing to do? If there's some identity you've built up over time, are you willing to walk away from it and try on something new? Which is pretty scary, because it's unknown.
So the question is not about money. The question is about my professional identity.
Well, we don't want to talk too much about money, but is that correct? Do you have that recollection that at some point I said, I don't think this is ultimately about money?
I do have that recollection. Certainly my resistance to the plan was largely based on money. For reasons that I can't explain, I did not worry about my professional identity. I was surprisingly comfortable, and I don't say that in an excessively prideful way, that I had practiced medicine well, I had practiced medicine responsibly, I had done my best, and I realized that five or 10 more years of medical practice would not enhance my legacy. And so I was quite comfortable leaving that behind and looking for another identity, or just looking for life without a particular identity of high level responsibility, in the sense of a medical practitioner has a significant degree of responsibility. So I can't explain why I'm not wed to my professional image of an aging physician still in practice, but I think basically it's a mistake for most physicians above a certain age to be practicing, to continue working. I think the chances of them making a mistake is increases with age, and their ability to learn and adapt decreases with age. So having monitored physicians in my own hospital for poor medical practices, I was comfortable leaving, if not at the peak of my game, so to speak, at the time that I left. I agree, however, that you did say that it wasn't completely about money. And I think that one of the emotional factors that lent itself to my sudden willingness to consider June of 2013 as an excellent time to stop, because that's when all the other financial transitions and commitments would have had to start. Another occurrence in that month was that our youngest child graduated from
medical school.
I was trying to say graduate school, but medical school. And indeed, I felt that not only were our financial commitments eased, but much more importantly, emotionally, I felt, you know, we've launched three children who are responsible and thoughtful and accomplished, and there really isn't anything more that was a great burden sort of lifted off my shoulders, in a sense a great accomplishment in our own small way. And I suddenly felt a relief that we could, in fact, experiment with our lives a bit. Mm.
Do you feel, ultimately, looking back, that we made this decision together?
I do. Of course we made this decision together, because we make most of our decisions together, and this decision involved any number of lifestyle changes, downsizing radically, selling property in D.C. to cash out, moving into a small cottage in a coastal town where we knew many people but did not have long-term friendships with many people. And so it was a giant change that we, a giant decision, series of decisions that we made together.
And it is, I always say it's interesting that you and I disagree all the time about almost everything, from loading the dishwasher to, I don't know, how to make
Well, that's because you don't do the dishwasher very well.
But, okay, so the point made, but that somehow when it comes to the really big decisions, we're eventually able to come to agreement or come to a consensus. You know, there's so much more we could talk about, and I think we should leave that for another day. Is that okay with you? All right.
Yes. Yes.
Well, thank you so much. This has been, even though I know all this, it's been extremely interesting, and I appreciate hearing what's in your head. It's a lot of fun for me.
Good. And I'm happy to try and translate any further noises that I make.
Okay. Okay. All right.
And I'm happy to work on your dishwasher loading skills too.
All right, that might
inspired to have a good relationship in a small community, and I think a 20-minute podcast sounds perfect, and I'm going to go off and exercise.
Okay. All right. I love you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's a wrap for this episode of Gap Year for Grownups. I hope you'll leave a review on iTunes and tell all your friends. You can reach us by email at thegapyearpodcast@gmail.com. And remember, however you want to reimagine your life, now is the moment. Don't wait. This is Debbie, your host. Till next time.